This is Justin Abey from Pinnacle Community Capital Investments, and you're listening to the SME Podcast.
You are now listening to the next great small business podcast. Welcome to the SME Stories Podcast, where it is all about small businesses in Canada. And here's your host, Ken Alfred.
Hey, everybody, we've got a great show today. We have Justin Abey from Pinnacle Community Capital Investments. So a little bit about Justin. Justin's roots in the real estate space run deep, as he comes from a family of architects and builders. He got his start in the field by working with his father and grandfather to flip dilapidated homes and construct new homes from scratch. Later on, Justin transitioned into a career of design, where he actually worked as a furniture and lighting designer, design engineer, project manager in architectural projects, and the director of product development for a home goods company. Throughout his career, Justin developed critical skills in contract negotiation, estimation, project management, vendor management, personal management, and design. Despite his successful career in design, Justin continued to pursue his passion of real estate on the side. 2 years ago, he took the lead into multifamily real estate, making it his full-time career. So guys, we're going to be talking about real estate investment on this episode, specifically talking about multifamilies. So I think that's going to be a great topic that we're going to talk about, and sit back and absorb. All right, guys, we have Justin Abey from Pinnacle Community Capital Investments. There we go. Yeah. Got all the names. Justin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Like we chatted just before the show, it's cold here in Canada. It's recording this in January. I think it's minus 12 degrees Celsius. And I was checking my calculator here. That's about 10 degrees Fahrenheit for you and for my listeners in the US. And it's really cold now. Here I am speaking to Justin, who is in sunny Oakland, California. So I'm a little jealous of that.
Yeah. I prefer to travel to the cold rather than to live in it. So,
we're going to get into that.
I'm happy where I am.
Well, yeah. Like I told my wife, Mrs. K, that I would love to retire to Hawaii. We'll see, because I know the real estate prices there are a little pricey. So we'll see what happens with that there. So
that's right.
All right. So Justin Abey, what's your story?
Yeah. So, going way back, I come from a long line of builders and designers, and people in construction and real estate. I cut my teeth through working with the family business, working on fix and flips and, fully ground up builds, single family homes. Did that. So I learned a lot of the ins and outs of construction, finished carpentry, so on and so forth, the business of it all. And then I went off to college to become a furniture designer while still continuing to pursue real estate. I worked my way through college doing remodeling of old Victorian homes in Savannah, Georgia. And then moved into a design career. And I spent the last, I spent about 20 years in the design field, making my way up to director of product development, production and quality control, for a large furniture company. And a few years ago, all while still pursuing real estate, doing real estate on the side and then worked, a couple years ago, decided to take the plunge full time into real estate investment. And so now I have made my way into commercial real estate, specifically multifamily, and doing syndications for real estate. And what that means is that, you know, we have a team that manages these properties that we go out and buy. And we raise money from the everyday investor who wants to invest in real estate and have all the benefits of investing in real estate, but none of the headaches. We take care of all the headaches, and they sit back and collect a mailbox check and at great returns with great tax benefits. So that's where we are now, and just loving the industry and working on big deals and really enjoying the ins and outs of that.
So that's great. I mean, you answered a lot of questions that I had already listed here, but we'll try to unbox some of those things that you said there. So actually, we'll go back for a second. What actually got you into real estate? What drew you to it? Because a lot of people get drawn to different things. So, you know, you were in the building space, the construction space, and, you know, you're fixing and flipping homes and stuff like that. But what was it that just kind of drew you into it? Was it because you're immersed in that environment, or, you know, you just thought about, oh, I wonder if we can probably make some money on this. So maybe there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, it's the intoxication of chasing the deal. It's working on bigger things and really developing myself into something that that I can work on projects that are larger than I have in the past, and just stair stepping my way up. It's, you know, in multifamily real estate, it's everything is a team sport, and so it's working with, you know, a team and the camaraderie of that, and relying on my business partners to have their expertise and for me to have my expertise and just, you know, really think about, my legacy that I'll be able to leave to my children, and then also helping other people with their legacy that they want to leave to their children, and helping other people build their wealth. Right. So, serving people in general. Right. And that's really what I love to do. Is, it's not about me. It's about helping, those people out there that don't really know, that they can invest in these kind of projects and receive amazing returns and build their wealth towards retirement and retire comfortably. And everybody's so used to investing in stocks and bonds. And yeah, those are great. I always say that people should be invested in that kind of stuff, but they should also diversify, right? And multifamily real estate is a great way to diversify, and actually beats the stock market most of the time.
So then you said, you talk about syndication, right? So you're saying that so you raise funds for these. These are like new developments that haven't been built yet, or are they currently? This is just for some of my listeners who may not be familiar real estate syndication.
It can be for anything. We try to diversify within the real estate realm. Generally, what we've been focused on mostly has been, it's essentially a long-term flip on a large apartment building, is what I like to describe it as. So we look for assets that have been mismanaged, that have been, maybe a mom and pop, that haven't raised rents, that have low occupancy. And what we're looking to do is we're looking for value add. So we raise the money for the down payments, closing costs, and then also all the improvements on the property. As soon as we procure the property, we're going in, we're improving the safety, the lighting, doing any repairs that are necessary that have been deferred, you know, which may consist of, replacing roofs or redoing the asphalt in the parking lots, or repairing units. And then as the units turn over, we go in and we improve them as well. So we'll remodel the units, whether that's to a classic standard or to higher end standard where we feel like we can get a little bit more money, an updated unit with modern amenities. And so what we're looking to do is increase the value of the property through forced appreciation, right? So, an apartment building is not, valued like a single family home, where you have a comp system, like your neighbor, next to you moves away, suddenly because they take a job across the country, they sell their house for $100,000 less than it's worth. Now your house is less. A multifamily apartment building is evaluated or valued on the performance, much like a business, the net operating income, right? So what we're looking to do is go in, decrease expenses, increase income, which increases our net operating income, and therefore increases the value of the property. And it's generally, you know, we like to describe it as 10x. Every dollar you increase the net operating income, it's multiplied by 10. Of course, there's a lot more factors that go into valuing a property, but in general, that's where we what we look for, and it really helps to project returns and create amazing benefits for people.
Oh, that's pretty cool, actually. So, yeah. So you said this is all over. So where are your properties right now, right? And how big, you said? I think you said that sometimes you were syndication. It might be that you're going after an apartment, but for the other types of properties that you have, what's the mix like for your company right now?
It's mainly multifamily. We're working to diversify into other assets currently, so it's generally in the Sun Belt, southern region of the United States, Columbia, South Carolina, Oklahoma City, North Carolina, you know, sort of all over that region, Texas, and yeah, we're looking to diversify this year into self storage, mobile home parks, car washes, a few different other asset classes that, and also ground up development as well. So those would be brand new apartment buildings that that we would invest in, essentially.
Wow! So the future's looking bright. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, right now is a really good opportunity, especially in the multifamily world. There's a lot of bridge debt coming due, where people are caught off guard with high interest rates. And so they're either going to have to refi, find people to inject capital into their projects, or sell under distress, which means that values will be coming down and we'll be able to pick up assets at a lower cost, which will then translate into higher returns for investors.
Yeah, no, I hear in terms of that, because I know here in Canada, especially our, like our mortgage is due in April this year, right? So we're already looking at what we're going to be doing next, right? And I think there's going to be a lot of it. And I don't know in California, but I know here in Canada, the interest rates are actually pretty high here. You know, especially to try to combat inflation, what they tried to do was increase the rate over and over and over again, to the point that you're looking at it, you're just like, oh my God, what are they going to do? Now, apparently rates are supposed to go down. We don't know when.
So yeah.
that's the thing.
We don't necessarily have the crystal ball for that, but yeah, I think, you know, especially here in the US, we're seeing the same thing. In general, we see rates come down around election years. So this year,
right. Perfect so timing.
Yeah.
Perfect
good timing, right. It's a move to try to get reelected. And I think we'll be seeing that this year, which will help to, you know, be able to make deals work, as well as the interest rates that we're seeing with the variable bridge loan debt coming due. There'll be some great opportunities this year.
Wow. So what's nice that you said, you talked about a lot of the locations you guys have, and you're saying you're touching different product classes. I'm a car washes, you know, self storage. And I find there's a huge demand for self storage, because it seems like, especially in my area, I'll be driving by, if it's a new construction site, it's usually some kind of storage or industrial area, whether it's an Amazon building or one of those grocery stores that, you know, it's just a food, you know, storage, right? So that's where they're going to be doing that. So I never really would thought it would be industrial. I thought it would always be like, oh, you know, it's about the new office buildings and new, all these other things. But I guess part of COVID and, you know, some cases people working more from home. I mean, they're starting to go to the office now, but back then, you know, office leases were starting to get really expensive because you had these companies that were holding onto these leases. Right. Everyone had to go home, and now they're like, "Oh, what are you supposed to do with all of them?" Right?
Yeah, I mean the office, commercial office space is in some dire straits right now. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But with COVID, you did see a lot of people migrating, right, moving out of the cities into different parts of the country. You know, here in California, we had a lot of migration towards Texas in the South. And so what do people need when they move? Either on this end, they need storage, or on the other end, when they get there, they might need to put things in storage. A lot of movement really creates demand in that space.
Yeah, no, exactly. So how big is your team right now? You said you have a team of people. How big are we talking here?
Yeah. So Pinnacle is a team of two, but I am also in the, you know, we work with operators. And so each one of those operators has a team of 4 to 8 people. So we're talking asset management, deal sourcing and underwriting. We're talking, what we do is investor relations, and capital raising, capital allocation. So we connect the investors to these deals. And then we have, a key principal who's the expert on the team, who signs on the loans, offers advice to the team because they've been around the block for a long time. They have, you know, the net worth and liquidity, to sign on the loans. And so each one of those properties has a team like that. Currently, working towards, bringing a team together, to operate under one umbrella. So we'll be the operators and the capital allocators. And so, it's some of the people that we've had on some other, deals that we've worked on. And we've all decided that we love working together and, you know, want to really, focus together and feel like we can do a lot of good things together. So
nice. So you're expanding, which is great.
Yes.
So I guess my next question is, where are you going to be, you know, what do you see yourself, in the next 5 years? What do you see in terms of growth, right? Are you going to expand? And it sounds like you already kind of are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we plan on expanding and just, trying to bring on as many assets that make sense to us. We're very conservative when we do our underwriting and, want to make sure that we're not just buying anything out there. We're buying deals that are going to be producers. Working on syndication as well as, you know, trying to pick up, some of our own units that we buy outright or partner with, capital partners on JV deals, instead of going the syndication route. So that might be on the smaller side. So generally, with JV deals, we're working on anything from 8 to 50 units. And then from 50 to 250 plus, that would be something that we syndicate just, right, for the size of the deal.
Right. And for those who don't know a JV, that's a joint venture pretty much that you're going, exactly. you're working with another company or another group towards, and you work on the deal together. So
correct.
No, that's pretty cool there. So when it comes to, you know, running this operation, because you got a lot of moving parts, right? Going, right. Cause you know, like how many deals are you currently working on at one time?
We look to, you know, take down a deal per month or a couple of per quarter, is our goal. You know, it's been, last year has been a little slow. It was, just because of the interest rate hikes, and the disconnect between the buyers and sellers, buyers wanting a higher price, you know, 2021 prices, and we're in 2023 last year. The dam is slowly starting to break. We're already seeing some trickles of some really good deals coming through and yeah, really the objective is to, one a month if possible.
Right. And I guess that's the thing too, right? Because I guess that's always, how do you kind of counter that, right? When it comes to people wanting that rate, right? They want the 2021 price versus at that time it was the 2023, right? So you got to be a little bit more selective of your deals, right? And now it sounds like now that things are starting to open up a bit more, you can scrutinize a lot more, right? Because correct. You're not just going to take any deal just because the price is low. And I think a lot of people have to understand that, you know, whether it's you're investing in real estate or let's say you're going to try to buy a business, let's say you don't want to start your own. Just because a business is on sale for like 50 grand doesn't necessarily mean that that's great just because the price is lower.
Right.
Right. There could be a reason behind it.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. And especially in the business world, you know, buying a $50,000 company, but under distress, it means that you have a lot of work to do. Right. And you might not be able to dig out of that hole. Whereas in real estate, we're looking for those distressed properties because we know there's opportunity there. There's a lot of growth that can happen, and we're forcing that appreciation, right?
Well, the fact that you guys are also focused on the multifamily aspect versus, let's say, single family homes, you know, your pool of properties to really do your due diligence on is a lot smaller, but still enough in volume that you can kind of go through it, right? Because I assume if you actually got into the single family home space, man, there's going to be a lot of those, right?
Yeah, there's a ton. I mean, you know, especially in times of recession, you see people foreclosing. You can save those people from foreclosure and get really creative with some of the finance and it's a win-win for the buyer and the seller because they stay out of foreclosure and they build their credit back up. And with the multifamily, there are some of those, creative finance elements that you can pull into some of these deals. But what I like to think is, you know, one multifamily is the value and the amount of work as 10, 20, 50 properties, single family, right? Right. And so we're putting in a lot of work for a multifamily, but you know, it's the element of scale, right, that we're working on. It's much easier to work at that scale when we're having 50 apartment buildings because we can pay for a property manager and we can, if someone moves out of an apartment, it's not eating all of our profit up, right? We can have up to 90% occupancy and still be cash flowing on a deal or even less than that. You know, our break even might be between 60 and 80% occupancy, right? And so what we're looking at is really economies of scale and the benefits of that. We find that we work on a 50 unit or a 250 unit deal. We're still doing the same amount of work to procure that asset. And so we like to look at some of these larger deals just because it has a greater economy of scale.
Yeah. And we're going to dive into a lot of those specific ones. We get to the tips from the pro segment here, but let's get back to this other part here where in terms of expenses though, if I go back on that question here, so how, like what type of expenses are you kind of seeing while you're running your operation that a lot of people probably don't even consider?
Well, it's, you know, the day to day of trash collection and water, sewer, gas, all of that, taxes. You know, taxes have been a big issue in certain areas going up. Insurance has been a huge issue, especially around the Gulf states and the East Coast, with all the hurricanes that have come through and destroyed a lot of cities. And so insurance has been skyrocketing and ruining deals. We see, you know, the general improvements of the property of, you know, replacing roofs and updating units and needing to buy appliances and do landscaping and safety and lighting, and so many things really go into it. And we're looking at generally a 50%, expense to income ratio. We like to try to reduce that as much as possible, obviously, to increase our net operating income, but that's usually where we're at.
Well, that's interesting though, because like you said, you mentioned a lot of monthly expenses. You also got some capital expenditures there, like replacing a roof or basically, like you said, redoing a parking lot or something like that. So it's a lot of different things that a lot of people don't even consider, right? Was there anything that surprised you that, you know, you've been doing this a while, right? So has anything surprised you where, oh my God, we actually have to pay for this item that, you know, we usually never have to pay for?
That's a good question. That's, you know, I think every project has hidden fees, right? It might be you estimate a certain amount for something and it costs a whole lot more because, you know, during COVID, we saw a lot of that material prices going up that we wouldn't have expected, like lumber and labor and you know, cost of inflation, all that stuff really plays into account, right? And so we take those lessons and we apply them to our next project and make sure that we're not caught off guard the next time, really.
Well, yeah, I think you just want to try to put as much cushion in there, right? It's almost like you want to stress test your deals,
totally,
right? Because of what could possibly go wrong.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. How is there hole in this, you know, how is there a hole in this hardwood floor? Who put that there?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, some of the condition of these apartments that we go into and need to remodel, it's astonishing. What we really like is to give people a pride of place and have a clean, safe place to live. And so the transformations are amazing. You see people living in filth and we come in and remodel and it's, you know, night and day. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of the before and afters on single family. It's very much the same. And we love getting tenants that just walk in and are blown away by, how nice and bright an apartment building is.
That's pretty cool. And are your units like furnished or unfurnished? Or they're mixed,
generally unfurnished. Okay. We might find in certain areas that we can, you know, work on midterm rental in some of the units, whether it's, you know, close to a hospital where we're bringing in traveling nurses and putting them up while they're staying for 3-6 months or close to a university, and we have a professor that's an adjunct professor or someone who's coming in to
for a semester or something, right?
Yeah, for a semester or something like that, and we'll put them up, or any sort of professional that's, you know, maybe relocating and needs a quick place to stay for a few months, but then we'll be moving out into their own home or something like that. Yeah.
No, it's pretty cool. And how about social media though? And like some businesses like to focus on social media, and I'm sure for, let's say for some contracting companies, they want their social media presence would be like those before and afters and stuff like that. So how important does social media play in your business right now?
Well, it's extremely important in the investor relations world, because we're always looking for new investors that want to work on these projects with us. And we're always looking to help people build their wealth and legacy. And so what we find is a lot of those people are living on LinkedIn mostly. People that are wanting to, are in a more business mindset, more of an investment mindset. They're looking for those deals, those investments, or maybe they've never heard of syndication or multifamily, but they're intrigued and always wanting to learn on how to grow their money and the benefits behind it, right? Behind syndication.
Excellent. All right. So here, let's talk about the industry then. So what do you kind of see? What's your current opinion on the multifamily real estate investment industry? And how do you see it going right now?
Well, it's been an interesting ride the last few years. It's been a little bit rocky, with, you know, unprecedented, interest rate hikes. But as we discussed earlier, there's a lot of opportunity coming in the next year to 2 years. A lot of, wealth to be made. And I think it's going to be really great in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. It's interesting how that's going to be going right now. Cause I know there's a huge demand for a lot of things. A lot of people want to get a new place, or even just, like you said, they're looking to move into a unit. So yeah, I mean, the demand is getting there. So it's pretty cool. So yeah. You've been doing this a while, right? So what has kind of been your biggest failure, but also your biggest success so far?
I think, really getting, focused is the biggest takeaway that I've had, in this industry is really focusing on, maybe a certain investment style, whether it's investing in syndication into multifamily or whether it's single family, right? You can go out and, and try to start a business and try to start a syndication company and try to go out and buy single family stuff or buy businesses, and really focusing on one avenue and getting really honed in on that is tremendous in what you can accomplish. And secondly, finding people who can mentor you. I think that's huge. You know, if you go out and you learn this industry on your own, it's going to take you 5-10 years to get really good at it. But if you go out and you find mentors who have been doing it for a long time and can teach you and guide you and show you the way, and you can bounce ideas off of, and you just grow tremendously, much faster than you would on your own. Right. And so, you know, I'm very thankful for all the mentors that I've picked up along the way and have really helped. And, you know, really the beauty of syndication is there's a built-in, expert in every single deal that can mentor you, right? Because the banks require it. And so, we really lean on our mentors to, you know, just lend a hand and guide the projects. And through that, we learn how to guide the projects ourselves, and they can then take a step back and just sort of watch things happen.
That's a really interesting thing here. Yeah. The mentors thing has always been very interesting, because I think a lot of, especially newbie investors, they don't even know where to start. Right. So like before we even get to our tips for the pro, maybe we can just jump straight into this tips in the pro anyways that we're going to cover. So for those who are kind of like interested in the real estate investment space, specifically multifamily, we can ask about this. So when it comes to question number one here, what do I look for in a mentor? But also, are there any red flags from a bad mentor that you've seen?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of mentors out there that say that they're a lot further along than they are, and they might not be good teachers and so on. I think it really depends on how well you jive with them, you know, whether you can consider them a mentor and a friend. Right. Whether you feel comfortable working with them, and it takes due diligence, in order to find those good mentors. Right. We're in the day and age of everyone's a guru. And so you sort of have to sift through the noise and find the people who are genuine and have not only a purpose of teaching, but have a greater greater goals of helping society and doing better in the world, right?
Yeah. Any initial red flags? I know some mentors, they might charge you a fee to do something, because I guess in their opinion, they might say, well, you got to have skin in the game, right? Because I guess the mentor-mentee relationship, it's like literally it's requiring a lot of time on both parties. It's not just, okay, I want you to be my mentor, Justin, and you know, I'll kind of be the fly on the wall. But if I'm adding no value, right, like, does there need to be a little bit of do you have to have skin in the game for a mentee to actually work with a mentor?
I think it helps. I mean, you'll find people that are motivated and, you know, might take a free course and run with it and do really well and do all the action steps. But when you're actually paying money to learn from someone, then, you know, you feel an obligation to do yourself a service of recouping that money and really pushing your career forward in that space. And I think, you know, you're investing in yourself more than you're investing in a mentor in a way, right? So
yeah.
I think that's always something to keep in perspective. But of course, you can go out and pay for a mentor that may promise you the world and can't deliver, right? And so it's really, again, doing your due diligence, going out and talking to people who have gone through the mentorship and going and reading reviews online, and having multiple conversations with that mentor and making sure that you're going to get the one-on-one time that you deserve by paying for that mentorship. Right. And so,
right.
I would say red flag would be that a mentor doesn't give you that one-on-one time and has, you know, maybe has a course recorded, but anytime you have a question, they're not there to answer it, right?
Right. So kind of like that, it's in one of my visual modules that I have in my course.
Yeah.
Okay, right, but right. I need more clarification on this, because let's say I'm working on a specific deal that, you know, your course kind of doesn't cover. And if it's about response time as well, because I know from the guru side, it's like, you know, they might have some coaches that they'll hire, that they'll bring on. So they might not be exactly answering your specific question. Maybe some right. of those gurus are legit. Some of them are not.
Yeah.
But you got to be cognizant of that, especially if you're paying money, right? I mean, in a perfect world, if a guru is like, if a mentor is like, okay, you want to be a mentee with me? Okay, we're going to work on this deal. Put up a little bit of money, and we'll work this deal together. So I'll show you exactly what we're doing, so you can see what we're doing. So it's something that's very hands-on. Not that you don't want something that's just like, video courses are great because it gives you a great understanding of some general information, maybe terms you're not familiar with. But when it comes to the daily grind of finding a deal, analyzing the deal, and being like, is this a good deal or not?
Right.
That's going to be the question. And how can people reach out to you, Justin?
Yeah. Yeah. So our website is pin-cap.com. And I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the things. So you can search us up there, or you can just go to our website, and our social media handles are linked on our website. So www.pin-cap.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Justin, for being on the show.
It was awesome. Great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Hey, you, do you need a voiceover? Well, look no farther. Northway Capital Group has your answer. Commercials and explainer videos, AVR and voicemail, health and wellness, corporate training and e-learning, announcements, documentaries, and biography. Contact us on social media or email us at northwaycapitalgroup@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the SME Stories podcast, which is owned by Northway Capital Group. Please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Northway Capital Group.